Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Charlotte.
I'm Chris. We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and in this podcast, we offer expert advice and practical strategies so you can experience more sexual pleasure and have the amazing sex you crave. We use explicit language and nothing is taboo. You can submit a question to be answered on future episodes by going to pleasuremechanics.com and hitting the Ask Us Anything button. And while you're there, check out our complete suite of online courses designed to help you master new erotic skills. And what better time of year to do that than coming up to Valentine's Day, and in celebration of the lover's holiday, we're giving 25% off all of our online courses when you use the code Valentine at checkout. So check out the courses, decide which new erotic skill you want to master to give your lover more pleasure this Valentine's Day, and dive on in. Our online mastery courses cover topics like couples massage, foreplay mastery, anal play for her, and prostate massage, as well as erotic spanking, if you're into that kind of thing. And these online courses bring our best strategies to you so you can master new erotic skills in the privacy of your own home at your own pace. We used to travel the country teaching sold-out workshops coast to coast, and while we love working with you all in person, I think it's actually way more practical to learn these skills at home, in private, when you want to, and you can come back to them again and again so you can master these skills over time. So we've brought our best strategies to you in these courses, and we encourage you to check them out. Today is episode 2 of our 3-part series leading up to Valentine's Day. Last week, we talked all about authentic romance and how to be more romantic all year round. And if you didn't catch that episode, I encourage you to go back and check it out. Today, we're talking all about flirtation, seduction, and initiation in relationships. Vital elements if you want to keep your love life alive over the years. And next week, we're going to be sharing our top 10 strategies to have the best sex ever so you can make Valentine's Day one to remember. So today, let's dive in.
Well, once you've gotten in the mood with all the romance that we were talking about last week, now we need to get into the mood for sex. The next step is focusing on flirtation and seduction. We all know that these are elements that often people include in their relationship at the beginning of their relationship, and this is why everything feels so exciting and sexy and interesting and fun. And then as the years go on, these are the first things to drop out, I think, most often. And with a little attention and a little effort and bravery, these elements can be put back into your relationship, and really, it can change the whole culture of your relationship. We love to talk about the culture of a relationship.
What does that mean?
And here at the Pleasure Mechanics. When we think about culture, we often think about countries or cities, but the truth is, anytime you get two or more people together, there is a culture created. So think about if there are spaces that you hang out in where there is a specific culture, whether that's a sport group or a...
And culture means what in this context?
We think of culture as ways we treat each other, ways we talk, ways we use language, ways we physically interact, habits that you have. Any of these small ways that you interact together over time creates an ecosystem, a whole way of being between the two of you.
Yeah, and these cultures are palpable. Think about different couple friends you have and going over to their houses. One friend's house might feel really warm and inviting, and you immediately want to just kick off your shoes and grab a beer and hang out. And another friend's house might feel really formal and rigid and cold even. Think about the different social spaces you go to and how you feel in that space. And that points to what the culture of that relationship, that family, or that social environment is. And so when we talk about creating a culture of pleasure in a relationship, and we should really do a whole episode on this.
Yeah, why have we not, actually?
I don't know.
We'll get back to you on that one.
Before episode 100, which is coming up faster than you realize, we will do a whole episode on this because it's really important. Because what it is it's your set of habits and expectations on how you treat one another. And this develops over time, often in a very unspoken way, and it becomes the house you live in. It becomes the way you relate to one another. And those patterns add up to the story of your relationship. And so if you want a relationship that's full of love and warmth and joy and laughter and, yes, great sex, you need to create a relationship that is conducive to that. And you create it through your daily actions. So let's get back to flirtation. Because flirtation, as Charlotte says, is very expected in an early relationship. In fact, it's how we often initiate a relationship. You develop interest in someone, you develop attraction to someone, and how do you communicate that attraction and desire to get to know someone? You flirt. You start putting out these little signals that say, hey, I'm kind of interested in you. Are you interested in me? And that is how often relationships start, or you're set up on your first date. And at that date, if you feel good about the person, you start flirting, you smile, you ask questions about their life, you express interest in them. And this is how we start initiating intimacy with another human. But once a relationship is established, people often take the other person's interest for granted. And especially once you get married or establish a long-term commitment, there's this sense of, hey, I've landed you, we're in this for life, why bother? And that divestment of energy, that pulling back of flirtatiousness, can really do a lot of damage to a relationship. So what we're going to encourage you to do is bring back flirtation into your relationship, no matter how long you've been together.
Yeah, it's one of the most important things I think couples can do. I'm going to take a slight tangent about cheating, because when people cheat, it's most often not about the sex. It's about the attention and the desirability. And so bringing flirtation back into your relationship is a way to make your partner and your lover feel desired, feel like they're being paid attention to. And it's an amazing anti-cheating and super fun, sexy way of cultivating your relationship. So it does many things at once. And it's fun.
So what does flirtation look like? Can you give us some examples? Because you are actually very flirtatious, Miss Charlotte.
I have actually had to dial myself back. In my younger years, my late teenage, my early 20s, I had no idea how to control it or how to harness it. And I would just flirt with everyone. But I didn't actually realize I was doing it.
You're naturally very friendly and outgoing, and
I love people. And so everyone I felt like was so attractive and so interesting and so beautiful. And so anyway, to the world, it appeared like I was flirting with everyone. I just thought I was having fun and adoring the world. So I think that's kind of the element. The main element is when you are paying full attention to a person and you are giving them your full attention, you are enjoying them, you're enjoying yourself, and pointing out or drawing their attention to why they're special, fabulous, good-looking, attractive. You're drawing out their best qualities and you're reflecting back to them how delicious they are, which can look all sorts of ways. Because it's not about what you say or what you do, it's really an energy, because it can happen in an eye contact, it can happen in a smile.
When you reach out and touch someone's arm and laugh at their joke. Mm-hmm. When you give them a compliment. When you make them feel special, like they've done a good job at something, you make them feel competent. Mm-hmm. These are all the elements of flirting. And think about how you flirted in the first stages of your relationship, because flirting is also really personal to you and who you're flirting with. Every two people have a very specific dynamic. So if you can identify how you flirted early in your relationship, how that courtship process worked, you can think about bringing those elements back into your relationship. And it's important to mention that flirting has to be reciprocal in order to work. This is why you don't go around falling in love with everyone, because you can put out those messages of attraction and desirability, and if it's not reflected back to you, it's kind of a dead end. Whereas if someone brings that energy back and receives it and then gives it back to you, it creates this positive feedback loop that builds on itself. And that can still end nowhere. You can flirt all night with someone in a bar, have a great time, and then leave and never see them again. Or it can end up in a marriage and three kids. So the energy of flirting has to be reciprocal in order to work. And this is really important to remember in our long-term relationships, because what happens often is one partner makes the effort and gives their partner a compliment, saying something like, honey, you look beautiful in that dress. And then there are a variety of responses the partner could give. The partner could say, ugh, thanks, but I really feel bloated and fat today. Dead end. The partner could say, this old thing, dead end. Or the partner could say, thank you, I'm actually feeling really sexy tonight, thanks for noticing. Reciprocal, that bounces the energy back and completes that circuit, and it makes it much more likely that that partner is going to compliment and flirt in the future. Because what happens is when we give these dead-end signals to our partner, and often it's not a specific choice to do it, it's just our own stress and overwhelm and feeling like not attractive and desirable enough. When we give these dead ends, it sends a signal of rejection to your partner, and then they stop trying. And then you stop trying, and you end up in this relationship that's kind of functional, but there's no romance, there's no flirtation there.
Right, and that is a habit in and of itself. So many women will deflect compliments because it feels challenging or they don't feel that way about themselves. So when somebody gives you a compliment and you don't know what to do about it, the best thing to do is say, thank you. If you haven't got to the point where you're like, yes, I do look sexy and I feel fabulous and you are so lucky to be in my presence.
Right.
Which is where I would love all women to get eventually. But if that feels foreign right now, then thank you is a great way to keep the circuit going.
Right. And then the next time you might say, thank you, not looking bad yourself, handsome. Or you might say, thanks. If you're lucky and play your cards right, you'll see what I look like out of this dress. Right? You can start being playful with this. And it is challenging. I think Charlotte's really smart to point that out, that it's not easy to receive compliments and flirtation all the time. But it points to the fact that the skill here of flirting in a relationship is twofold. You need to put your energy in flirting with your partner, and you need to put energy in receiving any flirtation that comes your way from your partner. And if you both invest in both sides of this flirtation coin, you will create the culture we were talking about, where it's very natural for you to flirt and be coy and playful and loving to one another. And that is what starts creating the conditions where you actually want to have sex with your partner. Because let's be clear, all of these conversations are towards an end. And the end is not only a happy relationship where you feel fabulous with your partner, you have a happy family, whatever that looks like for you, you have a great relationship, but it also means you get to have great sex with that person. And we often hear from people in long-term relationships who don't really even feel like having sex with their partner of 5, 10, 20 years. And so how do you get back to that point where you were at the beginning, hopefully, where you actually desire this person and you feel desired by them? And flirtation in your day-to-day life is one of the primary elements you need to activate. And we go into this more in our Foreplay Mastery course. And that course is really all about everything that leads up to great sex. And so we start with all of these elements of your relationship that you need to activate to get in the mood to have sex, to feel desired by your partner. And then we go into the skills of seduction and initiation. And then finally, all of the physical foreplay that warms you up and builds arousal and primes your body to have amazing sex. Because that's really what foreplay is. It's that whole cycle that gets you up to the point of having amazing orgasmic sex. And our Foreplay Mastery course covers all of those skills, including relationship skills and flirtation. So what comes up after flirtation?
So flirtation is also this opportunity to bring playfulness and bravery into the relationship, because it's risky to put yourself out there. And we're going to talk about initiation in a minute, which is a whole other layer of putting yourself out there and offering yourself up. But this is a great place to play with it and really think about it as a current. So some of the moments that you can look for as opportunities for flirting, when you notice that your partner looks really delicious or looks really gorgeous to you, to comment on that and to notice specifically what looks beautiful or attractive or handsome to you, because a kind of generic statement can be lovely to get, but a really specific statement can be even more powerful.
So instead of, oh, you look hot tonight, you can say, the color of that shirt really brings out the blue in your eyes. You look gorgeous.
Or I'm loving the curves of your body right now in that outfit.
It means that you're paying attention to them specifically and not just using a generic compliment, which actually goes back to our whole episode on romance, which is discarding the generic tokens of romance in favor of the really authentic gestures of romance. And so when you're flirting, be specific and be authentic, and it'll go much further.
So look for moments in your day-to-day life, whether that's verbally, through writing or texting, that can evoke flirtation and appreciation of each other.
One of my favorite ways of flirting is when you're in a social situation. So if you're at a cocktail party and you and your partner are at opposite sides of the rooms, make eye contact with them, hold it, and smile at them, and just beam them the message that they are the hottest person in the room and you are so excited to go home with them. And they'll feel it. And creating that current of energy when there's other people around makes it even racier and more exciting. And you can even try this at family dinners if it's getting really boring. Just look at your partner and lick your spoon of the chocolate mousse your grandma made.
Oh, gosh.
No? Some people will like this, some people won't. It could be confusing to you. You could have cognitive dissonance. But the point is recognizing yourself as a couple in social situations can feel really hot and flirtatious because it's saying of all the people in this room, I guess this doesn't really work at a family dinner, but at a friend's house or at a party or at a bar, of all the people in this room, I've chosen you. And you express that through verbal flirtation, through physical flirtation, through eye contact, through smiles. And that goes a long way to send that message.
And I think extended eye contact is a great first place to start. If you're looking for a way to amp up your flirtation game, just making eye contact and staying a little longer than you normally do can be a bold yet direct way to begin flirtation.
Indeed. So flirtation, seduction, initiation, we think of these as three phases of creating the conditions towards getting in bed. So we've talked about flirtation. So seduction is all about creating an invitation to an intimate moment together. And you can seduce someone into a kiss just as you can seduce them into making love all night. It doesn't have to be the full experience of sex to require seduction. Seduction is about creating an invitation and inviting that person into an experience.
I think seduction has a bad reputation because I think we always think of it sort of in this negative way, either of women using it to control other people.
Or men seducing the innocent.
Right.
Taking away their innocence. I think seduction, a lot of people really reject it because it comes with this very specific aesthetic of, lady, I'm going to seduce you.
Right.
That was a really weird voice.
No, but I think that's the point, right? I think
that it's like a wide-brimmed hat and cleavage and a cigarette holder or something. Like, I think of this very specific image and that I don't identify with at all. And so it's like, oh, I can't seduce someone. What does that even look like? But the essence of seduction is about reaching out to someone you desire and making them feel that desire, making them feel wanted, making them feel attractive, and making them feel what you want with them. And that is a really sexy thing. And who doesn't want to feel desired? Who doesn't want to be seduced? And we actually talk to so many women who want to be seduced by their husbands. That's their primary thing they want, and they don't know how to communicate it.
Well, I think you have to know what you want. And so I think a lot of those women also don't perhaps know exactly what they would like.
I think one of the important things to keep in mind in terms of seduction in a long-term relationship is that the sex becomes a known quantity, meaning seduction with a stranger is kind of about the anticipation and the unknown and the hope that it's going to be this super sexy, off-the-charts experience. When you're talking about seducing your spouse, there's kind of a known quality of your sex life. And the higher quality your sex life, the easier it is to seduce your spouse. Meaning if you're not feeling very connected in bed and you're not having great sex, then it becomes really hard to seduce one another because it's not really worth the effort to have bad sex. Whereas if you're constantly working on improving your sex life and trying new things and creating really pleasurable experiences together in bed, then the seduction becomes a game between the two of you, and it becomes this way of teasing one another and building desire and building anticipation for that moment where you do have time together in bed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think there's an element of seduction being an invitation So you have something in mind that you would like to explore, experience together, and you're either suggesting that verbally or with your body or with your, I want to say your vibe or your...
Yeah, that makes sense.
That you're suggesting and coaxing and inviting them to come do a particular kind of dance together.
Right, and when you get invited to a boring office party at the bowling alley, you are not that thrilled about it. But if you get invited to an amazing dinner at a chef's house, the anticipation starts building and you can't wait and you put effort into the event and you show up ready for an amazing experience. And that's the difference, I think, with great sex in a relationship versus kind of boring routine or even bad sex is an invitation to bad sex is not that exciting for most people.
But I also think that even if the sex has been good but getting more mundane, beginning to imagine what you would like to be experiencing and then inviting your partner in some sort of way that has elements of play or sexiness where you're feeling turned on and are interested in that experience you want to create can lead to some better sex.
Right. And I think an element here about seduction is you have to be confident in the invitation to really give it. So this requires for you to be excited and enthusiastic about the sex you're having. And what's cool here is if one person really starts showing up and being enthusiastic about the sex life, it's easier for the other person to be pulled into that vibe, since we're using that word.
I know, it's like, oh, that's not the greatest word. But I think it's really about experiencing turn on and then inviting somebody else into that. So this can happen in all areas of life, honestly, but it's getting connected to what you feel excited about, what you feel turned on by, and sharing that.
Which goes back to our point that we always make, that your sexuality is yours alone first. And to have a great sex life with a partner, you need to be in touch with your own sexuality and excited about life and knowing what you're desiring and craving. And then you bring that to your partner with this air of, I can't wait to do this, and you're the person I want to do it with. And that becomes the invitation.
Right. And all of those are skills to keep developing. We can always, always, no matter where we're at in our sexual journey, get better at those experiences of understanding what we want, asking for what we want, seducing. It's a lifelong journey. So if you don't feel good at it right now, don't worry. Just jump in, dive in, explore and experiment, and you'll just get better and better.
And you can start outside of the bedroom if that feels easier. Seduce your partner into a weekend getaway. Start planting the seeds of how nice it would be to get away together, where might you like to go, plan the experience together, because planning a trip is actually a lot like planning sex. You talk about your desires, your cravings, your boundaries, what you're both in the mood for. So start there. Start by seducing your partner into a fun weekend and see how good it feels. Another element of seduction is initiation. And initiation is one of the scariest phases for a lot of people when it comes to having sex. Because initiating sex means risking rejection. So putting yourself out there, becoming vulnerable, and asking your partner to have sex with you is really scary, no matter how long you've been together. And the risk of rejection is the biggest reason people don't initiate sex.
So there have been some fascinating studies done on rejection, and it turns out during fMRI studies that parts of the brain that are linked to physical pain also light up when somebody experiences rejection. So the body registers rejection as pain. So we want you to really take that in, because that is really significant. It's a reason that so many of us avoid putting ourselves out there and asking somebody to do something in case there's rejection.
There's also really interesting studies around the language of rejection in cultures around the world. And in almost every language, there's some version of heartache, heartbreak, and this idea that you physically hurt when you're rejected is reflected in most languages around the world. So that's really also interesting that it's this universal human experience.
Of the heart.
Of the heart and this idea of pain when it comes to rejection. And within a relationship, this happens all the time where one partner reaches out, gets rejected, feels that pain. And after only a few experiences of this, we tend to avoid the risk of that pain by not initiating, by not making ourselves vulnerable. This is one of the big reasons we encourage couples to take intercourse off the mandatory menu every time they make love, because a lot of women reject overtures of intimacy if they're not in the mood for intercourse, whereas they might be in the mood for a foot massage or cuddling or oral sex or any other version of intimacy. And taking intercourse off the mandatory script of your sex life goes a long way towards lowering the risk of rejection.
So meaning, I just want to clarify for people who are new to our messages, that if somebody is making an overture of wanting to connect in some way, that it doesn't necessarily mean that if you say yes to that, you're saying yes to intercourse.
Right.
That you can receive a foot massage and that the evening can stop there because that's what feels amazing that evening. Some other moment it could lead to intercourse, but if you don't have that expectation, there can be many more yeses.
Exactly. We have nothing against intercourse. It can be an amazing part of your sex life, but it has to not be mandatory, because if it is, a lot of people say no to any form of intimacy in order to avoid penetration. Because let's face it, penetration is a really intense physical act. We've covered this in other episodes.
We think you'll actually end up having more intercourse if you take on this strategy of not having to have intercourse every time you connect.
But for now, really just think about how you initiate sex and how you receive your partner's initiations. And one of the differentiations I really want to make is the difference between rejection and refusal. Rejection feels very personal. It's saying, no, I don't want to do that with you. Whereas refusal is more about me, like, I am not in the mood for that. Thank you for your offer. So think about being invited to a party again. Rejection is like, no, I don't want to go to that party with you all. No way. Refusal is, I have another engagement, or I can't make it. Thank you so much for your offer. Those are really different responses. And I think a lot of rejection sexually is actually refusal. It's about the person that's being hit on not being in the mood, not feeling very sexy in that moment, not wanting to have a certain kind of sex, and it's expressed as rejection. So one of the things I really want to encourage you to do is start shifting your language towards one of refusing sex rather than rejecting the initiator. And this is a really smart way to lower the pain of rejection. It still might be hurtful if you are refused sex versus rejected, but I don't think it hurts in the same personal way, and it doesn't create the same negative feedback loop. The other thing you want to do is, if someone initiates sex and you're not in the mood, is try to offer an alternative. I'm not really in the mood for full-on sexy time, but how about we put a movie on and cuddle? Or, you know what I really need right now is a long walk together and to talk a few things out. So you're staying connected as a couple and not pushing the other person away, but coming up with an alternative form of intimacy, whether that's sexual or not.
Right. Or, I am so tired, can you give me a back massage instead? I would really appreciate that. Those sorts of moments, they're so important.
So once you establish the practice of not rejecting one another's initiations of sex, there comes the question, how do you initiate sex? And in the Foreplay Mastery course, we go over 8 distinct ways of initiating sex so you can find your own style, because it is a really personal thing, couple to couple. A few ideas that some people use. One is the written overture. So you text one another, you email, or you leave little notes that start hinting at the fact that you're ready to have sex and start seducing your lover into that experience. This works well for a lot of couples. A lot of sexting is a form of seduction and initiation, and maybe it'll work for you.
And a lot of people will start on Monday to be prepared for Friday night. This can be a week-long experience of drawing the excitement and building the anticipation and excitement and potential, and telling each other what you want to be experiencing and playing with that.
And this long-term initiation, this long-term seduction, works well because what we know is that the more you think about sex, the more your body will be prepared to have it. And this works because what happens in our brain becomes real in our bodies. And if you get little emails or texts throughout the week that start hinting at all the pleasure you're going to be experiencing this weekend, your body will start priming itself and you'll actually get preemptively horny for the experience. And this works well for a lot of people. Another thing people do is they use some sort of item in the house, and this works especially well with kids where you can't talk as explicitly about sex at the table. You have this object in your bedroom or on the mantle, and you manipulate that object to symbolize readiness for sex. So you turn a statue upside down, or you put two elephants together, or whatever is for you. And maybe this is an object from a trip you took together, or something that feels romantic when you look at it. And by doing this, you're non-verbally signaling to each other. Because some people just don't like the verbal approach. And this works especially well for couples who want one person to be very aggressive and dominant. And if the person receiving that dominance, if the more submissive partner is in control of that object and turns the statue around, it kind of says, I'm ready for you, come after me. And this can work well when you feel like the romance is gone, if you have to say that out loud, which we don't believe that has to be the case. But some people want a nonverbal way to say, come and get me. And that can work well.
If, for those of you who don't have statues in your home that you can turn around, things like seashells that you put on the bedside table, crystals, like, I don't know what you're into, but
if you
know.
Don't have statues, you might have crystals. I think crystals and statues are kind of in the same camp.
Yeah, like if you're going to have one, you might have both of those. But you know what I mean? A bottle of wine. I don't know. Whatever you're into. But I just wanted to expand beyond statues.
It can be any object.
It can be lube. No, okay. Maybe not. Maybe that's not so seductive. Anyway, moving on. You can figure it out. Y'all are creative.
There's a pile of towels and some condoms. Come and get me.
So, yes, we met this great personal assistant once who talked about how she was she'd been married 45 years. And what she did when she wanted to initiate sex, she put on her sexy lingerie and went and literally dropped something in front of her husband, who was normally watching TV, and then just
slowly bent over to pick up that object, waving her ass in the air.
Basically, and was like, come join me. And he was always game, of course.
She's like, it works every time. What if people have a hard time with you? Just drop something in front of them and wave your ass around.
Like, brilliant.
And this is a form of visual seduction, which is using your body, using your sexiness to invite your lover to come and ravish you. I don't know why come and get me is my phrase of the day, but that's basically what we're saying is I'm in the mood for sex. Join me.
Right.
That's kind of what initiation is. And if you boil it down to that level, what are the ways you can communicate to your partner that you are eager, you're ready, you're excited about sex, and invite them to join you in on the party? And visual seduction works for a lot of people. And the side benefit of it is you have to feel sexy in your own body to visually seduce someone. And if you take the time to prepare yourself and to feel sexy and to wear something that puts you in the mood, you're already halfway there. You've done some of the foreplay on your own. And then you're at the point where you're waving your ass in the air or come out of the shower in a fresh robe and find your lover and slip his hand in between the robe and your skin. And, you know, it's you are bringing that sexiness already, and that can be very hard to resist.
We often think about seduction being really linked to these things like lingerie and sexy clothing and jewelry and makeup for women, and those are assets that you can use, but they don't inherently create seduction. It's the mood that you're in that's most important, and then you can decorate yourself with these tools of seduction if you wish. But I think as a culture we've gotten them collapsed so much so to the point that people feel like if they get dressed up nicely that is how you seduce.
Right, and some people feel sexier in cotton undies and a little tank top than they do in fancy lingerie. And some people will feel really sexy after working out with their partner and they're both sweaty. Other people want a shower before they even consider having sex. So this is where you get to know yourself and know what makes you feel turned on and ready for sex. And that's step one for initiating. You get yourself ready and then invite your lover in. And if you are refused or rejected, but hopefully you'll be refused more often now, if you are already in the mood, you can take that turn on and enjoy it yourself if your partner is not ready to join in. I think it's really important that we know when we're aroused, we make an overture to our partner. If they're not ready to join, then masturbate. make love to yourself. Go for a run. Go for a walk. Go take yourself out for a nice hot chocolate and feel alive in the world and use that arousal for yourself if it doesn't get activated with your partner through initiation. And this means that it's a no-loss strategy. You've turned yourself on. Now you get to do something pleasurable with or without your partner.
I mean, this is also why practicing romance and flirtation and even seduction sets the stage, creates the environment so that initiation is more likely to result in...
A yes.
Yes, coming together, I was going to say, if you will. But absolutely, as Chris is saying, all of those experiences are valuable for yourself because they're fun and they feel good. They feel pleasurable on their own.
Another little piece here, and we have a podcast coming up with this amazing sex thinker, Emily Nagoski, and she's going to talk more about it, but there's spontaneous desire and there's responsive desire. Spontaneous desire is the kind of desire you feel where you're horny, you're ready to have sex, and you feel it. Responsive desire is just as real and even more real for a lot of women, where you only feel the desire for sex once it's already in motion, once it's initiated, once your lover is there with you starting the engines. Another strategy here is if your partner initiates sex and you're not really in the mood right away, go along with it for a while. Start kissing, get a little naked together, touch, and only take it as far as you authentically want to. But don't say no just because your brain is somewhere else and you're not necessarily right in the mood. So challenge yourself to say yes more often, knowing that your responsive desire might kick in and you might really enjoy yourself, even if you weren't in the mood to start with, but also with the very strong rule in place that you can stop the intimacy at whatever stage you feel like it or your partner feels like it. So if it only goes as far as naked cuddling and kissing, that's still a win. That's still really positive for your relationship. It releases all the pleasure hormones. It's good for your body. It's good for everyone involved. And you had something, you have more intimacy than you did if you had said no. Does that make sense? And we'll hear more about spontaneous versus responsive desire in our interview with Emily Nagoski coming up in a couple weeks. So make sure to stay tuned for that, because she takes the conversation to whole new levels. I guarantee you'll learn something mind-blowing in that interview. I sure did. And next week, to wrap up our three-part series for Valentine's Day, we're going to be talking about 10 of our favorite strategies for having your best sex ever. Because once you've done all this romancing and this seducing and initiating, if you're both in a yes zone, how do you make it fabulous? How do you keep improving your sex life and having more and more fun in bed so it's something you want to repeat more often? We're going to share our top 10 strategies, so make sure to stay tuned for that next week. Subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast player so you never miss an episode. And make sure you come over to pleasuremechanics.com and join our newsletter, which is a free weekly dispatch of our newest podcast episodes, insider access, and exclusive giveaways. So be sure to sign up for the newsletter so you don't miss a thing. While you're there, check out our complete suite of online erotic mastery courses so you can brush up your skills before Valentine's Day. We're offering a 25% off discount for the month of February. Use the code ROMANCE for your 25% off discount. You can learn skills like couples massage, foreplay mastery, anal play for him and her, or erotic spanking, which is what a lot of women want for Valentine's Day, I do believe. Don't you think?
I think a lot of people want a lot of different things.
And we've got some advice for it all.
It's true.
Come on over to Pleasure Mechanics. Drop us an email if you have any questions. We're always here for you. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics.
Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.
Cheers.